summer's kiss. How do you rid the sweat after the body bliss? How do you turn your eyes from the romantic glare? How do you block the sound of a voice you'd know anywhere? Oh, I really should have known by the time you drove me home, by the fakeness in your eyes, your casual goodbyes, by the chill of your embrace, the expression on your face that told me maybe you might have some advice to give on how to be insensitive.
Alex Worms with her incredible version of the 1994 Jan Arden classic, Insensitive. Alex just happens to be my very special guest this week. My name is Stuart McKee, and this is Musicians FAQ. My guest this week is a singer, songwriter, composer, and musician whose music and styles defy genres. She's comfortable doing anything from jazz, classic, pop, soul, rock, or folk. Everything she creates has an authentic and honest tone to it, and her emotions draw from real-life experiences. Please welcome to the show, Alex Worms. All right, so my guest this week on Musicians FAQ is Alex Worms. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I've been looking forward to chatting. We first met in Song Studio just over a year ago. I guess they just had the Song Studio just concluded again for this year, and I saw that you had your song, one of your songs covered by Jesse D. How was that?
That was incredible. That was such an amazing feeling, especially because the last summer when we met, that was my first time at the Song Studio workshop. And I realized from that workshop just how much I still had to learn about songwriting. And I worked at it really, really hard over the past year. And then to have my song covered this year, when the year before it was not chosen, just made me feel really good. And Jesse T, of course, is a phenomenal performer. And, you know, as someone who I would say, yeah, I perform quite a bit. But, you know, I'm kind of like a jack of all trades, master of none kind of person. And with Jessie, she's just so great at the performing aspect. Like she brought something to that song, especially with her singing, that I felt that I couldn't. So it was a really, really cool, exciting feeling.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it must have been incredibly rewarding. Yeah, I've listened to it a few times over the last week, and I thought, you know, it's just beautiful. And I'm a big fan of Jessie's, and I actually got to co-write a song with her not too long ago. But yeah, immensely talented and everywhere. She's, you know, probably the hardest working person in show business. It's incredible. All right. So that sort of struck me right away, just because of our connection with Song Studio and the connection with Jessie. And you'd done a show with her, I think, as well, a virtual show not too many months ago as well.
I did. Yeah. I got to open for her at a virtual concert called Music by the Stream a couple months ago.
Right.
Yeah. Again, really cool experience. You know, she's someone I definitely look up to, who's been doing this a bit longer than me. And I felt like I learned a lot from her at that show. And then again, when she covered my song, gave me some ideas.
Well, that's all it is. It's all about learning and getting new ideas. So I want to kind of take things back to the very beginning, because I mean, I really don't know that much about you. Been a fan. I mean, we were in a breakout group in Song Studio together. I mean, I've heard you sing and play. And I know you're a great songwriter, but I don't know too much about you personally. So where were you born? And tell me a little bit what your childhood was like.
So I grew up in Pickering, east of Toronto. And, you know, I think I had a fairly normal, you know, childhood. I tried a lot of different, you know, activities. I was in sports. I was, of course, in music. Now, I went to several different schools growing up, but we never moved, which was kind of interesting. So I definitely, I don't know, like I don't know if there was really anything remarkable about it, to be quite honest. I did live, one thing that I think kind of stands out to me, like we lived in a street that was pretty out of the way, and there weren't many other kids on the street growing up. So I do remember, and both my parents worked quite a bit. So I do remember having long stretches of time sitting around in the house, being kind of bored and sometimes kind of lonely. But I always had my music and my piano. So I think having all of this space and time to fill as a kid really helped me to just really, really love music and messing around on my instruments and learning to create that way.
Nice. So you said you'd gone to a lot of different schools. Is that just the normal progression as you went to each grade level, or was it more than usual? And what prompted that?
It's been a long time. I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. I remember a couple of the schools I went to weren't like a typical public school. Like I remember I went to the kindergarten class I was in was a big one room classroom, you know, where they only taught kindergarten. And then, you know, we moved to another school that was only grades 1 to 3. And then we moved to another school that was only grades 4 to 8. Like, I just remember going to these little schools that weren't, full schools, I guess. And
right.
And then at one point, my parents decided to take my brother and I out of private school and put us in Catholic school. And then I went to Catholic high school, and then I decided I didn't want to be there anymore, and I moved to public high school. So there were just a lot of different reasons for different school switches.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, I know a lot of people, myself, I went to a lot of different schools because we moved around a lot, and that certainly has some impact on your childhood. And I find that the moving around a lot has sometimes been a very common factor with a lot of musicians and songwriters. I always find there's probably something that triggers, whether it's angst or whether they're just, there's a lot of music in the house, or whether, like you described, maybe having some loneliness where you kind of go, music becomes your best friend. I was just curious whether the schools had informed any of that, because sometimes when you're moving around a lot of schools, it's hard to fit in, or whether there was maybe music schools or art schools or things like that involved in your childhood.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure like, you know, everything I've ever experienced has tied into my music somehow, especially because, you know, I was so in love with it from a very young age. And, you know, I think one thing, one characteristic that kind of sticks out to me to do with switching schools was that it never really bothered me too much to leave, you know, one ecosystem or one group of people and just up and leave and go to another, because right. I don't know if I ever felt terribly close to anyone. Like I would have, you know, like it's not that I had no friends, I had friends, but you know, the friendships weren't so deep that I could not
right.
bear to leave. And I remember, you know, especially switching high schools, I think, you know, when you're 13, 14, 15, you know, I think that almost felt like it was going to be tough. And then I left and I realized I didn't really miss any of those people that much anyway. Yeah. So I've always been a very kind of independent person. And I actually, you know, that last move, and I guess we'll kind of, you know, the more we talk about my life, we'll see more kind of demonstrations of this getting up and leaving one thing and seeing if there was something different to do. I've done that in a lot of ways, but yeah. my last high school, I did end up meeting a lot of friends who I still talk to today. So I did finally find my fit, but it was a lot of bouncing around kind of leading up to that. And yeah, just, I don't know, I guess on the positive side, I got to meet a lot of people and experience a lot of different things yeah. and have a lot of ideas. So that's that.
Yeah, I think that's the positivity. I think for a lot of people who haven't been away from their family or haven't moved around a lot or haven't changed schools a lot, it becomes one of those things where they finally get out on their own. Maybe they want that freedom and they really go extreme the other way. But I found a lot of times they're just afraid to kind of branch out, and they don't necessarily want to try new things. They want to stay where things are comfortable. And so I think it's kind of great that you've got that curiosity where you're just going, well, okay, everything's great here, but okay, what's the next adventure? And you know,
exactly.
Yeah. Now were your parents or other people in your family musical?
Yeah. I have a lot of musicians in my family. Nobody who pursued it professionally though.
Right.
So, the music was definitely always there, but, yeah, that's kind of one thing that actually made it difficult to go out and do what I'm doing now, because I, you know, the attitude was always, this is something we do for fun
yeah.
and we love it and we work at it a lot, but it's for fun. It's for fun. Right. Was an attitude I kind of had to get over. But yeah. But that definitely was really, really helpful, because we would always be singing and people would bring their like lots of different instruments too. People would bring their instruments to like the family Christmas parties and,
nice.
You know, the cottage and whatever. And we'd jam and sing together. And that was always so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's interesting. I mean, if music still has that stigma where, yeah, music's great, but you can't make a living at it, or, you know, or that's not a legitimate type of lifestyle or whatever it is. I mean, a lot of people come at it from different angles. I mean, you know, for my parents, I mean, there's a lot of music in the house, but yeah, they always, you know, have a fallback plan, have a plan B, you know, go to university and all those things. And then there's other people who just, there is no plan B. It's music or that's it. Like there isn't anything yeah. else I can do. So are you somewhere in between, or is it all in for you, or is it?
Definitely all in, and kind of like most things in my life, it took a lot of bouncing around to kind of get to that point. But yeah, I don't really do anything that is for work. I do, you know, I do go out and have fun once in a while. But everything I do for work is music related. You know, I did study science in university at the beginning, and I used to do calculus and physics and, you know, somewhat be okay with it. But, you know, at this point, like I have students, so I'm a music teacher and a performance coach. I perform live. I do session work on different instruments. I'm now in film scoring as well since COVID. And I have my singer-songwriter project, and that all keeps me very busy.
It's a lot of different hats. Yeah. And I mean, I guess to some extent, you know, music can be very mathematical when you talked about some of your higher learning with math and sciences and things, but certainly an arts, considered an artsy thing, but I think maybe even piano more. I mean, there were studies done that kids that have formal piano training and things like that will do much, much better in areas of math and things like that.
I walked a broken road down to a place we used to go, a different world this time around. The evening is still quite warm, the water is slow and shallow, our footsteps are buried underneath the ground. Oh, sun, don't settle on me. I took my pocket change, canceled my old investment, said I'd find my way from here. The sunset
Hi, this is Alex Worms, and you're listening to Musicians FAQ with Stuart McKee on CKMS Radio Waterloo 102.7.
All right, there was a song called Sunset by Alex Worms.
So when did music actually enter your life then? I mean, obviously quite young, but did it come in through the family, or was it the radio, or you mentioned you had a piano. I mean, when did the piano come into the house, or was that always there?
Well, my dad had, like long before my parents got married and whatever, he had this beautiful, it still has a beautiful weighted keyboard. And there are old home videos of baby me and like those little baby basket rocker things, whatever those are called, by the, you know, below the piano while my dad's playing it. So there's no doubt in my mind that that was probably my first introduction to music, was hearing my dad play the piano. And I do remember some of my earliest memories. I don't know what age that would have been, 3, 4, but I was always trying to climb up on that thing, like get on the bench when it was taller than me.
Right.
And I remember like it would take so much work to get up there, and then I would be on the bench. And he had this, he had a bunch of music books. And one of them was the sheet music for Phantom of the Opera. And it had like all the original Broadway cast pictures in it. And I would plop that book up on the stand and pretend I could read the music. Then I was playing the notes. So I had been asking and asking and asking for piano lessons, like since I could talk. My parents waited until I was about 7 to actually enroll me. But yeah, I always, always was drawn to that piano. And that has not changed. Like I still, like the only thing I want to do most of the time is play this freaking thing. Like and you know, other than that, like my parents playing records, you know, we had a lot of they weren't records, they were CDs, but you know what I mean? Yeah.
Your parents are younger than me then.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but
I grew up on records. I mean, for me, it was records, 8 tracks, cassettes, and then CDs came into the picture much later in life. But
I don't remember seeing an actual record until like being, you know, much older when vinyl started making a comeback. But right. I remember when I was younger, it was always CDs. And like my dad had just drawers and drawers and drawers of CDs. And he was always showing me stuff. There's another, you know, going back to those like early 90s old home videos that my parents have of me, like there's the cutest video of, I don't know how old I would have been, maybe 1. And I really, my dad always told this story. I loved Tom Cochran when I was a kid, when I was 1, because every time he started playing like Life is a Highway, like I started like dancing, and it wasn't other music. And that was really cute because I actually got to open for Tom Cochran a few years ago in Hamilton.
Oh, no kidding.
So that was a funny kind of full circle moment at Festival of Friends, I think in 2019. But yeah, so music was always around, mostly because my dad was always playing stuff for me on the piano, and also on CD. And yeah, he loved it. And so then I did as well. And I still kind of have, you know, I developed a lot of my own tastes kind of the more I listened to different things. But there's a lot of his taste in music is kind of still there when I listen, which I think is kind of cool, kind of nice. Cool.
Yeah. So you mentioned Tom Cochran, obviously Canadian, and then you've covered Jan Arden's Insensitive, which, you know, is not it probably goes back to around the same time as that Tom Cochran song. So was that an influence by the parents as well? And do you have a special sort of affinity with Canadian artists?
Definitely. Yeah. And that Insensitive was on Jan's, I think, 94 album, Living Under June. And that was one of the albums that was in one of my dad's overstuffed CD drawers.
Okay.
So I've known that song, you know, since I was little. And
and it's a beautiful version that you do, by the way.
Pardon?
It's a beautiful version that you do, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That's a tough song to cover. I mean, that was such a massive, massive hit. And I mean, for a lot of people, that's the first song they'll think about when they think about Jan Arden.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, like it was a song I came back to a lot. Like, you know, when I was really young, I thought it was beautiful. And I love that entire album. You know, my older music, you know, structurally, I think follows a lot of the tropes of 90s pop music. So like Jan Arden and early 2000s, like Vanessa Carlton, like, you know, when songs were still 5 minutes and they had 3 verses and 2 bridges and stuff like that. That was, you know, really, really kind of, I guess, a key kind of time in my life listening to music. And I always came back to the song Insensitive. Like, when Spotify became a thing and I started listening to music on Spotify, like, and I didn't have CDs anymore, I still went back and I downloaded that album because, I liked it so much. And when it came to the last recording session I did for the last couple of solo singles I've put out, the producer I was working with said, "Hey, why don't you do a cover? Like, you haven't released any cover songs yet. That might be cool." And we were looking at, some recent songs. We were looking at Post Malone and Julia Michaels songs, and they sounded okay. We wanted to do a solo piano thing, but I wasn't totally convinced, and I was just, as I spend a large portion of my time doing, I was just messing around on the piano, and then that Insensitive just popped into my head out of nowhere. Right. And I always thought it was a piano song, to be quite honest. Like, I had never heard anyone else play it that way. But I just, had this feeling that it kind of was meant to be that way, in my mind anyway. And I sent a little voice, I just played through it once, as you've heard on the single. My interpretation is very simple and very stripped down. So it wasn't something I really needed to practice much, just kind of happened. And I took a little voice memo and I sent it to the producer, and he called me back 5 minutes later and was going like, "What was that?" Right. And I think what's really cool about covering that song, in 2021 is that a lot of people my age have never heard it before.
Right.
They don't know it. And it's such a, it's such a perfect song. It's written by, I don't know if you know this, it's written by Anne Laurie, a songwriter named Anne Laurie, who, so Jan's version is technically a cover as well.
Okay.
But just, it's such a perfect song, right? It's,
it really is. Well, it's funny because I was going to say just what you were saying, like, as I'm thinking, it's a brilliant cover, because a lot of older people will remember the song, but a lot of newer people will maybe think it's a brand new song, as opposed to covering something by Julia Michaels that was just hot like a year or two ago, or even more recently. I think that's a great way to go, because then it really does give you a little bit more freedom to do your interpretation. And I think that's nice coming at it from a piano artist, to be able to kind of do your take on it. And especially when it happens organically and naturally, where the song was always in your life and meant so much to you. I think that then it's much more honest and convincing when you hear it. It's not like, "Oh, she's trying to cover that song." It's like, "Wow, that really does." I mean, because that's why I thought, "Wow, that's a perfect song for you." I mean, if I'd never heard it before and you told me you wrote it, I'd be like, "Yeah, that makes sense."
And I mean, I'm not trying to, pretend that I wrote it either. I really like, for me, if I think about, really, if I was going to pick one kind of style of music that really cemented my love of music and songwriting, it's this stuff. It's, the late 90s, early 2000s female singer-songwriter music, and I like the idea that other people might go and listen to it now. Just, it's one thing that I really love, so that I like kind of sharing with other people.
Well, and I love the idea that you're identifying with that type of song. As you said, the longer songs, because it seems like songs are getting shorter and shorter. And I find, even as a listener, I'm getting sucked into that myself. I mean, whether you go on TikTok or wherever, or somebody puts out a song, I catch myself kind of going, if it doesn't grab me in the first 30 seconds, I shuffle on to the next song, where I never used to do that. I mean, I'd bring home an album and I would listen to an entire album side and then flip it over and listen to the other entire side. And then you'd start to have your favorite songs that you might skip to. But, it seems to be more and more of a formula. Now, that being said, and I'm just talking mainstream radios, I think maybe you are as well. But there's still lots of artists that are doing things outside of the norm. And I think it's, there's that balance of what's artistically satisfying to you creatively and to other people who maybe want to hear that same type of song. And then also trying to find something that's commercial and appealing enough, because you do need to make a living. Yes. So it's a tightrope to walk, for sure. But so far, it looks like you're doing a great job with that.
Thank you. Yeah.
Dialed in to stupid high expectations. Everyday life and everyday love. When I called into question the lengths we go to fit in, I couldn't see the end. I had written a letter, balance for my boyfriend, and picked up my pen. I've written two. That envelope. I know it's irresponsible to drink for attention. It's either lose out or lose myself. And I counted the coasters, the kisses to my collar, feeling angry and confused. How I want not to want to. I hate the mainstream, the media.
Always find myself singing along to that one. What a great tune. That's called Too Many Love Songs by Alex Worms.
So when did you actually first start then singing and writing songs?
So I was, classical piano was my first love. So I, as we kind of, this is working really well. The segue was perfect. So I got my piano lessons around age 7. Parents could not rip me off the piano. I was playing classical piano. I did really well because I never stopped practicing. And by the time I was 11, 12, I was playing around, you know, I believe I was grade 8, grade 9 in the Royal Conservatory by that point. So just, you know, really, really loving it. And what ended up happening was one summer, my mother forced me to go to drama camp and I didn't want to go, but then I went and I loved it. And so then of course we started looking at musical theater auditions and because I loved it. And at that point it was like, well, if you're going to do musical theater, you have to sing. So took a couple of singing lessons and, you know, it went well. And now that I had a little bit of an understanding of how to sing and I was singing in stage productions, then I decided I wanted to learn to play and sing at the same time. And I remember that was really, really difficult for a couple weeks. And then eventually I started being able to, you know, do both and play more complicated things while singing. It took a long time. and then I started writing my own songs. Like it just kind of was, you know, one thing fed into the next. And I guess I started having ideas. You know, I mentioned that, you know, I would go to school or go to theater or whatever. And I think a lot of kids would come home and they'd be friends with the neighbors' kids and they'd go and hang out with their friends. Like, people were always saying, oh yeah, like I was hanging out with so-and-so yesterday. And like, we watched movies and whatever. I didn't have any kids on my street. Right. So I would, you know, any kind of social interaction with someone, because, you know, obviously in class, you're not really interacting with people that much. I mean, maybe a little bit, but anytime anyone said anything to me that I thought, you know, that I'd be like, oh man, that was so nice. Right. Like things just had such a huge impact on me that really were just very small. And then I'd be thinking about that one thing, you know, on the bus home. And then I'd be in the house by myself with that one or two things maybe that I thought were cool that happened that day. And they would just, and I'd be practicing and those thoughts just kind of started organically working their way into the music I was playing. And I mean, that's kind of how I still write songs today. I'll have, you know, I'll be thinking about something or watching something or talking to someone about something and a phrase will stick out. And it's not necessarily someone's exact words, or it could be, but the thought just, you know, the sentence fragment just pops into my head, and usually it already has a melody, and then away I go. So that kind of was my way of journaling, I guess, when I was a kid. Like some people, I'm sure, wrote diaries. I started writing my diaries in the form of music. And that was just how I kind of processed things from about 12, 13. And then I never stopped.
And I wonder if being a piano player, maybe more than a guitar player, that you're saying the melodies were all kind of already there. Whereas I know if I come up with a line or a lyric, sometimes I just blurt it out and I'll get lucky and, oh, that's kind of a catchy little melody. But I would think as a piano player, there's just naturally more melody in your head and in just in your existence. Like I was thinking about it, was Too Many Love Songs. That was your song as well. And that does just sound like a line that, you know, you're sitting around with some friends and, man, there's just too many love songs on the radio, or however it came out. And I don't know if that's how it came about, but that was the first song of yours I heard. And then I saw the video and you're dancing around your apartment and it was just very fun and very casual, but more than just a basic pop song, which was kind of lovely too. So,
Yeah, definitely. That one, the title of the song is what came, that too many love song, like that's what came into my head first, and then the rest of the song was based on that. So that one, I can remember, I kind of melded two kind of days in my life into the lyric material for that one. But that was definitely one of those kind of lightning bolt lines that just kind of materialized in my brain one day.
Well, that's awesome. Now, how does songwriting as a singer-songwriter and writing for radio or pop or jazz or whatever, you know, sort of thing that you're writing for at the time versus writing for movies or soundtracks and things like that? And is it just instrumental music that you're doing?
Yeah. So I'm doing for film scoring. In film, you have source music, and which is sounds that are happening in, like, you know, like the sound of cars or the sound of a radio or whatever. And actually, sometimes I write source music. For instance, like one of the projects I finished a couple of months ago, I'm the song on the radio, right? So in that case, it was writing lyrics, you know, making, you know, programming synth pop stuff, and that was writing a song that would fit in the scene. But usually when I talk about film scoring, I'm doing the score, which is, you know, like the soundtrack music. It's not it doesn't usually have words in it. You know, it's just there to tell the audience what to feel about what they're seeing, right? So with that, it's a lot of instrumental, it's all instrumental. You know, it's a totally different way to create music. And it's really cool.
Yeah. And it's such a powerful thing because you don't really notice it until you start to think about it. And when you're watching the movie, and, you know, Jaws is always a good example, or those old Alfred Hitchcock movies, where suddenly the music turns and you know something scary is going to happen, or it gets lighter and you know something fun, and, you know, and then every once in a while they might throw a wrench and the music and the scene contradict each other, but or it sets up something different that you didn't see coming. But usually it's happening so naturally that you don't really realize it, but it's funny, and it does affect your mood, and you're already at the place that they need you to be in. So yeah, it must be a lot of fun. It must be an incredible thing to do. So what
I love it.
Yeah. What do you prefer? I mean, is this fairly new? Like, how long ago did you start doing the scores and things?
I did my first film score just prior to COVID. Okay. And that, you know, not really knowing what I was doing, right, to be quite honest. And that film came out in 2020. So that was my first, it's called How to Impeach a President. If anyone wants to check it out, you can find it on Amazon Prime and stuff. And I did that with one of my bandmates. Ailish Corbett was co-composer on that with me. So we did that together and kind of figured it out. And then after that, yeah, I was primarily doing live stuff. Never really had an opportunity to explore it further. But it now with the lockdown, it has been mostly in the past year. So I did two short films this year. And I was also involved in a Bell 5 TV show called This Is the Thing, which is a Hamilton. It's kind of like a hilarious love letter to Hamilton in a short little TV series. So I've had, you know, with the absence of all the other work I usually do, the weddings, the touring, and, you know, the recording sessions and whatever, I had more time to dive into it. And I've signed contracts for my next two films that are going to be this fall. And I just, I don't know if I don't really have a preference, to be honest. What I like about having film scoring as an option for me now is that, you know, and you've definitely, every songwriter has experienced this, sometimes you just don't feel like writing songs, yeah, right? And sometimes, you know, like I've figured out ways to pull myself out of that when a song does absolutely need to be written today for whatever reason. You know, there are ways to kind of get back into that zone. You know, it's not all organic. It can't be when you're doing this as work. But it's nice, you know, to have lots of different possible ways to create music, right? Sure. You know, I'm going to work on this scene today because I really don't feel like finishing track 5 of my new album. No. And, you know, they both need to be done, but I'm choosing to do that today. So it just kind of gives me, it gives me choice. So I really, really like that, because sometimes you just, you know, you need a break from one thing. So then you do something else for a bit.
And, you can get in a rut. Balances out. Well, and it's interesting. I mean, I've always associated you with the piano, but obviously you have other instruments in your room there around you that I can see. And I've noticed some things that you've posted on social media, usually involving you and a new instrument and your cat, and experimenting, whether it was a bass. And is that sort of is there an ambition to learn some of these other instruments, or how many instruments do you feel comfortable playing at this point? I mean, piano is obviously your main instrument. Is there another, are you fairly comfortable on guitar?
Yeah. So, again, just testament to having all of this time, you know, mm-hmm. again, sitting in my house like I did when I was a kid, but, you know, now having this ambition, right? I've been performing prior to COVID. I played guitar, but never performed on it. I played ukulele, but never performed, you know, so I'm kind of at the point now, like in some of my live streams, I am playing guitar, I am playing ukulele, and I'm playing piano. And as far as bass, violin, and trumpet go, I'm still learning, maybe in a couple of years I'll be playing those for people. For now, I just f- find them really fun.
Yeah.
And as you know, occasionally, like if I need to play a short bass line on one of my scores, you know, I'll have to practice it way longer than a real bassist would, but I can pick it up and figure it out and eventually play it. But a lot of what I'm doing on the film scoring side now too is production and using samples, you know, and kind of learning to play the computer, if you will. So lots of, I'd say I'm still definitely the strongest on piano and voice. And I think I'll always be that way. I've been doing both, you know, since I was a kid, but the other instruments are just, it's inspiring to pick up something you don't know as well. Like, and it's just, you know, the joy of learning something new, like, and, you know, I think the difference a day of practice makes on something new compared to something you've been playing for your whole life, like it just feels good, right? Like I can play that scale today and I couldn't do it yesterday, you know? So they're, and the cat, you know, playing for my cat is just, everyone seems to enjoy that, right? So it's partly for my own amusement, but also largely for everyone else's amusement. Cause you know, it's funny how many people have brought up those videos of my cat.
Yeah, you can't go wrong when you throw, you know, a pet, a cat or dog or a small child into a video, and you immediately get people's attention because it's got the cute factor.
Singing your song, never be silent. Showing your heart, knowing the truth. Does anyone buy it? And day after day, never faced or even acknowledged. If I go away, far, far away, would anyone notice? Reporter. No one understands. Tired ears denying the problem. He's flying away, far, far away. He gave up his permit. Leaves a quiet place, empty and gray. Can anyone hear it? Songs to write, tales to tell.
That was Alex Worms with a song called Birds from her 2019 EP, Burgundy.
But it's interesting. I mean, I can relate so much to everything you said. And I think so many people I've talked to, I mean, so many things have come out during the shutdown of COVID. It's like, well, I can't play live. So maybe I'll try this or I'll try that. And same thing for me, for sure. I mean, and I use bass and different instruments to kind of put a certain part into a song that I'm working on or recording at home or to add some color. But I was going to ask you about the inspiration thing, because I'm wondering, like, for me, being a guitar player first, and then if I start playing on the piano and I've gotten more comfortable with that and I've actually written quite a few songs on piano over the last year and a half, do you find that picking up a different instrument might inspire a different song? Like, have you been writing songs on anything other than piano?
Absolutely, yes. And in fact, that's why I had a guitar, you know, before COVID. Like, I wasn't performing on it, but some songs just, you know, when you're playing, when you're writing a new song, and you will know what I'm talking about, but you feel whatever the energy of that song is, right? And not all songs are meant to be piano songs. Yeah. So if I'm hearing, you know, something more in the rock side of things, it helps to write it on guitar, even though, well, I mean, I'm better at it now. Like, now I'm confidently writing on guitar. You know, 3 years ago, I was playing guitar very badly, but it was still giving me kind of the energy and putting me in the world that I needed to be in order to finish that song, right? So definitely writing on other instruments. You know, now, do I pick up an instrument and say, I'm going to write a song using this instrument? No. The ideas, as I kind of said, even when I'm given a brief where it's like, you have to write a song about this to fit this idea, the ideas kind of hit me like a lightning bolt. And then I go, okay, what do I need, you know, to give myself in order to finish this? And that's kind of how I go. And sometimes it's a guitar. Sometimes it's like a synthesizer sound, or, you know, in the case, I think one of the songs I probably sent you was Birds. That was a viola sound, yeah. Right? And the viola hook is the first thing you hear in that song, right? So, yeah. So I definitely find having other instruments helpful, especially because, you know, when you play one instrument for too long, I find I kind of, my hands start going to the same place, and it's hard to kind of sometimes break a pattern of whatever you've been playing recently. So it's a good way to get inspired, for sure.
So upcoming, I always want to give you a chance to a couple of things. I mean, you've got a lot of different socials and websites and things, projects that you're working on. So, you know, where can we find you? Where are you going to be playing live next? You know, when's the next song coming out? What are some of the things that you want to promote right now?
Sure. So anyone interested in following my work can go to alexworms.com. I'm also on almost every social media, at Alex Worms on most of them. And well, all of them that I am on. And the other thing, so as far as new songs and performances go, the shows, I've booked a couple things yet to be announced, but all of that is announced on my website. I also have an email list, is the best way to get my news about new music releases and shows. And you can sign up if anyone does want to sign up for that. Just go to the homepage of alexworms.com and scroll down, and there's a little sign up sheet to sign up for my email list. And once a month, I just send out the show dates and any other news. I have written a lot of new songs over the past year, and I'm, you know, working on what to record. It's an issue of choice right now. I might have a couple of things that I'm sitting on that I haven't announced yet that might be waiting to be released. Stick around and see.
Great. That's good. I'm definitely excited to hear and see what's going on next. And any artists or anybody, I know you mentioned somebody earlier, and is there anybody that you want to kind of promote, any up and coming, whether they're indie artists or just a new artist that you're really, you know, inspired by? You maybe can, so for the benefit that some of us maybe haven't heard of, or maybe just somebody you want to promote and say, there's a great artist, follow that person.
Oh, yes. So many, of course. But the two people who come to mind that I've seen perform recently are two fabulous singer-songwriters from Hamilton. So that would be Juliana Jones, who is a pop and R&B incredible singer-songwriter, and Heather Valley, who's doing a folk Americana kind of sound. Two other people from my Hamilton music community.
Nice, great. Alex Worms, it's been absolutely a blast talking with you today, and I'm glad we've had a chance to sort of connect and catch up a bit and get to know you a lot better than maybe the first time that we kind of met and talked. But I look forward to seeing a lot more music and hearing a lot more music from you, and we can maybe follow up then down the road when you have some new projects that you haven't quite announced that you're secretly keeping under wraps. And once they've been announced, and maybe we can come back and do another episode and highlight some of those as well.
I'd love to. Thanks so much for having me.
It's been my absolute pleasure. All right, we got time for one more song today by Alex Worms. This is another song from her 2019 EP Burgundy, and this song is called All Be Gone. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the show. My name is Stuart McKee, and this has been Musicians FAQ.
It'd be so nice to see you again.
Hi, this is Hills of the Fog Blues and Brass Band. You're listening to Musicians FAQ on CKMS 102.7 Radio, Waterloo, with your host, Stuart McKee.